All right, let's go ahead and begin. Not because I'm always super punctual, but I know there's hills and we've got places to go before and after this. All right, so let's do it. Thanks for being here today. I had joked with my wife that if we had like three or four talk about this, I would be thrilled. And so we kind of doubled up on that. Thank y'all for being here. My name is Dustin Barti. I'm from College Station, Texas, and this class. Entitled Fostering Faith. I want to talk about what that means and kind of see where we go with that this afternoon. And I don't know what your curiosities were about this class. Maybe you were cued into it a little bit with the name, but this class may not be what you expect. It may be just what you expect as we kind of unpack this idea here at the lectureship. Thrilled to be here, excited with the Spirit. Part of me just felt, hey, did anybody else feel like Amen and Bob Goff this morning? Just so many things. I'm like, whoa, that's like right up the alley with a lot of things that are true for our family and what we're thinking. First, I want to talk about this word foster. When you look up this word foster, you'll see it has a play, a definition to mean cultivate or to encourage or nurture or to help or aid. And yet when I... This word for our family, it runs deep in some ways when we think about how to care for another human being. You know, if you have an idea or a new rhythm in your life, you want to foster that. You know, like with this class, foster. But for a person, how do you foster a person? How do you care for a person? And then this idea of faith, probably the most famous faith passage we have in the Scriptures. Hebrews 11:1, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the convictions of things not seen. There is this idea of belief and of trust. And how does that play into fostering? And moreover, how does it play into this idea of love? All right. This is a place our family visited yesterday. Our crazy crew drove up from Texas. And we're that family. We're like the Griswolds. And we drove we went off the beaten path just a little bit to Salvation Mountain. It's this part of Southern California there on your way in. And it's this folk art place. And I guess this is this old station wagon, amongst other things that were donated. And look at the sentence that caught my eye. Love is the strongest force in the world and always will be. I'm like, amen to that. And of course, you see at the top, Acts 2:38, a lot of script. This obviously was a Church of Christ station wagon donated there because this is one of our favorite verses that we love in the Churches of Christ. I love this quote, a byline of the song, a byline of this class. Love is something, if you give it away, you end up having more. I actually believe that in Sunday school, I was taught this song somewhere in Cradle Roll. We were taught this, and I would sing it and echo it. And I thought, where did this song come from? Because we don't sing it in church anymore. It's a little fuzzy. The lady's name is Malvina Reynolds. Who's Malvina Reynolds? What song did she write besides this song about love? Something if you give it away. Well, she actually wrote a famous song called Little Boxes. It's a song about California. You recall this song? Little Boxes on the Hillside, Little Boxes, Made of Ticky Tack. Yeah. I feel a connection to this lady in a strange way. She passed away 8 days after I was born. She was 77, and yet her lyrics and her words, they stand up. And so this idea of fostering faith, I want this thing to be resonating with you, this idea of love, something if you give it away, if you disperse it, you dispense it, somehow you end up having more. And we're talking about the lectureship theme, we're talking about spiritual rhythms, okay, and maybe you've been attending some fantastic classes on prayer, some classes on what does it look like to have a better rhythm in your walk with Scripture. Yes, I'm for those. It seems a little strange to have a class on this one, on foster care, if you were, but I want to put a little insert in that even in some of the texts that were suggested to us, these themes that you're hearing, is it so strange to imagine Esther and Mordecai? Esther growing up without parents, right? Mordecai taking her in, right? Like raising her. That's all we know of her story. Think about Naomi and Ruth. Think about the tragedy that struck their life and two unrelated women decide to stick it out and do life together. And their story unfolds. And so you kind of got this, okay, we're kind of blended. We're kind of different in that way. I love that. You know, let me back up. Whatever your story is, I think most of us in the Christian story have a heart for displaced people. Fostering is that at its most basic level, along with lots of other kinds of care, is having a heart for displaced individuals through prayer, through action. And my hope in our time together, and I'm going to give some time at the end for just sort of dialogue, for questions, question and answers, whatever you've got. My hope is that you'll come along in whatever context you feel to consider a faith that would stretch. A faith that would stretch and would replenish itself with a love that continues to give and multiply, okay? Let me talk about our story. And I was joking with some friends earlier. I said, this kind of class is unusual and hard in some senses, because if you give me a text, or if you say, hey, we're going to talk about this idea or this theme, and you could kind of play with that and you connect with it, but you're always sort of at arm's length with it. This is my family and my life and kind of our journey. So it's going to be a little awkward in some parts, and I'm hoping I don't break down and become a hot mess through it. Okay, these are our four kids from a few years ago. All right, on the right is Shiloh. She's now 11. Deacon, my son, on the left over there is 8. Phoebe is in the black dress. She is 6, and Mercy is 4. They're all older than that now. This is from a few years ago. And here we are, just this family, living life, doing life, ministry, church, all of it, cheering for the Denver Broncos every time we can. All right, you know, you start them young with their collegiate and NFL allegiances. And, you know, on the one hand, when you think about fostering and our family kind of tending to ourselves, I think about, what was Mordecai thinking? Like, is Mordecai just saying, okay, you know, do we give Mordecai a pass because he, it was duty and it was family and, you know, it's just the right thing to do to take in his cousin and to care for him, maybe. Naomi, we know from the text in the story of Ruth, she told her no or go away or I'm going to release you 3 different times, right? And Ruth just continues to be stubborn on it. And so, all right, I'm not going to fight you anymore. My hope in this class is that something is helpful with fostering. Something is helpful and compelling. We know these texts well. James 1, verse 27. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. And these texts, they haunt us, but they should fuel us. We know God's posture towards those that are displaced and those that are hurting. I mean, the Psalms describes him as a father of the fatherless and a protector of widows is God in his holy habitation. And we know Psalm 82, right? To give justice to the weak and the fatherless. Maintain the right of the afflicted and the destitute. Right? Like, this is our aim. This is our charge as human beings, as Christians. And for a bunch of years, I was really the lame duck bad guy in our family dynamic, okay? So my wife, Carly, she's sitting over here. Late at night, some nights, she would be on the computer, and she would be clicking through photos of families. Well, that's not true. Yes, families, but moreover, orphans in other countries who had special needs. In particular, one organization called Reese's Rainbow. I don't know if you've heard of Reese's Rainbow. We had some friends that adopted through that. And she just would read these stories of these children in other parts of the world that, because of their medical conditions, were abandoned basically in orphanages. And, I mean, these things are breaking your heart. We're crying. We're looking at this. She would slide her phone or the computer over and say, look at this one. You know, tell me their name and stuff. And for years, I'm telling you, I was the bad guy, because I would say, oh, you know, maybe a family that has like 1 or 2 kids could care for those kids, or who doesn't have any kids could adopt those kids. We have 4 that God has tasked us with, and, you know, I don't want to shortchange them. I mean, we're already way outnumbered. It's already a zoo, because that's what it is. It's a zoo when you have more kids than parents, right? It's not a circus. That's a well-organized machine. A zoo is sometimes the animals come out, you know, and play. Sometimes they're docile. That's what that is. But for years, I would just say, no, no. And I felt like the bad guy for doing that. And something happened in our sphere with friends, particularly some friends in Searcy, Arkansas. 2 friends in particular that we started to notice a change in their family dynamic. Family's name were the Baker family, Andrew and Amy Baker, another family called Brandon and Joy Tittle. And we noticed that they were making margin in their lives and started adding people to their family, and they were foster kids. We're like, what? We thought, well, they're in ministry just like us. They're not super successful. They're not killing it, you know, and you're not driving all these nice cars. Like, what's going on there? And so we asked them, we said, what was the moment that changed for you to become a foster parent, a foster family? And Joy Tittle told us. She said, I was at Catalyst, this event in Atlanta, and I heard this teenage girl get up and talk. You know, Katie, the Kisses from Katie gal. I think her name is Katie Davis, right? So I heard her talk about all of these little children, little boys that she was adopting in this other country. And she said, my excuses and my layers began to just get peeled back. I thought, why not me? So she's sitting there in this crowd of thousands of people, and she says, why not me? Why not us? And so for her in that moment, responding, us, knowing them, we're responding. It's sort of this follow me as I follow Christ thing, right? And this sort of awakens something within us. Unbeknownst to us, one Sunday at our church at the time in East Texas, I preached a sermon. I don't recall what it was word for word, but I know it was something on risk, and it was halfway decent because when we got in the car to go to lunch, and I sit down, and I'm it's a time at this period of time where I'm in the passenger seat. My wife's going to drive us to lunch. And I said, okay, where are we going to eat? And she said, oh, that was a good sermon today. Okay. She said, no, you were really speaking my language about risk. And I said, oh, okay, that's great. Yeah, okay, where are we going? She said, I think I have some things that I would like our family to adventure into that are risky. I looked at her. She said, or were you just talking to all those other people? Oh, okay. Yeah, all right. And so from this moment on a Sunday, we begin to pray and walk and do our homework to say, okay, God, what would it take to become a foster family with the purpose of adoption? Because there was something that was still pressing on our family's heart that even though we had this large family, we were incomplete. Not that our family was lacking, not that they were there, any of them were not special, but that God just wasn't done with us yet. And so we go through the training. I mean, it is just a whirlwind of things. I mean, they want to have every document on you. They want to know you graduated high school. I mean, all these kinds of things. And the people we would meet in the training, I mean, hours upon hours, all kinds of training, watching these stories and videos, real kids and how they just get the raw end of the deal, right? Some people would ask us from time to time, how do you describe foster care? Like, how do you describe that? I say, well, it's kind of like there's a high wire trapeze act, and you're the safety net that catches these kids that are falling. They've been pushed off, they've slipped, doesn't matter, they didn't do anything wrong. But as they fall, you're kind of that safety net, circus metaphor, that catches them. You break their fall and you give them love and they don't get crushed. Like, that's your job. You don't know how long you have them. You don't know how long it's going to be, but you show them love in that moment. So, okay, we're watching these stories, crying, thinking, wow, this is tough. It's going to be exciting, but it's going to be tough. And we would meet people. We would go through this certification, right? You have to have so many hours per year as a foster certified family. I think I'm articulating that right. We meet these families that just about the moment we start to think there was something neat about ourselves. Wow, look at us, this big Brady Bunch family who's going to foster. We meet these people, no lie. There were some folks that were in their 80s and they were still caring for babies. There was this one lady too, I'll never forget the look on her face. She goes, I just love the babies. And I'm looking at her thinking, is this legal for them to hand a baby to this lady who's 80? And I mean, I don't even know how this works, but the numbers of babies that she had cared for in her lifetime is just mind-blowing. I thought, this is wild. This is unbelievable to see that anyone could really do this. Anyone could really stretch and bend and love. So we finish up the training, and we were certified on Monday, December 8th, and on Tuesday, December 9th, the very next day, we got a call, and it was this guy. His name at the time, he was named after his dad. Mom and dad had made some bad decisions with substances, and he had been snatched, and he had this name, and we thought, okay, you know, we'll call him that for a little bit, and we just had a sense that he was something else. And so we kind of started calling him a different name. We started calling him Fisher in hopes that one day he would become ours. And he grew up, he flourished. It's an interesting thing to care for a little baby that you don't know all of their tendencies. And they didn't come from you directly, but you love them. And they call you mama and dad. And there's all of this love that went into it. We got him when he was about 5 weeks old, and he's still with us today. We'll talk about that, his story, a little bit more in a moment. We didn't have anything to care for him. He came as a newborn, and we had gotten rid of all of our newborn stuff. Like, what do you do? What do you do with that? We had some friends help us, get us a few baby clothes and car seats and some of those things. And at the time, we had a vehicle that fit us perfectly as a family of six. I mean, perfectly. Nicest car we've ever owned. And now we've got a baby, a foster baby, and the car seat doesn't fit real well. And we even changed vehicles. My wife would say it's because she knows I like changing vehicles, but we were uncomfortable. We were displaced ourselves, so we changed it up. We went to a summer camp the following summer, and he's been with us almost about 6 months at that time. I'm talking to some teenagers about taking risks again. What is the deal? When these words leave my mouth, God begins to laugh at me or honor that or whatever, hold me accountable to that. And I say these words and all these things, and on the drive home from Searcy, Arkansas, our phone rings. And it's a caseworker. She says, hey, we have another placement for you if you'd like it. Okay. Everything in me, in the human sense, don't they know we already have one? Why are they giving us another one? I'm asking, can they do that? You know, why isn't somebody else? I mean, are we selfish? Why didn't somebody else take this child? And as in the state of Texas, it's not like this ever. In the state of Texas, you're allowed a maximum of 8 people in your home, right? So whatever that breakdown looks like, it's 8. And so for us to already have 4 of our own plus 1, we had a spot for 1. We had another girl come a few weeks after that phone call. We said yes. It was a little boy. It didn't work out. This little girl came in July, a few days after we returned from Searcy, Arkansas. Her name was Zakira. We thought she looked like a Daphne. And we didn't want to be confusing to her because she didn't stay with us forever. We thought it was just our little nickname for her. This is the morning after she arrived, and she's smiling a little bit. She's got a passy, but her hair is kind of a mess. I have a different photo from about 10 minutes after she arrived at our home, and the look of sadness and displacement and despair in her face, I'll never forget. I was at an elders meeting, and I got the text in the middle of the meeting that showed her picture, and I went, well, she's beautiful and she's gorgeous, but this is exactly the kind of thing that breaks your heart. When you go through the foster training, they talk about if you want to know what it's like to be displaced, if you want to know what it's like to walk just a mile in their shoes, they said take 2 minutes and think about what you would grab from your house, your top 3 things you would grab from your house if you had 2 minutes. And then that's their world. Even worse for their world is sometimes they don't even get to pick what those 3 favorite things are. But as they are displaced, everything they know, their favorite clothes, their favorite animal, whatever, it doesn't always get to travel with them. And it was true. The things we got was like nothing for her. It's a documentary on YouTube. It's about 12 minutes long. I encourage you to check it out. It's called Removed. It's all kind of shot through the lens of a foster child about 10 or 11 years old. And one of the lines in there that stuck with me as she's narrating this was, she says, you don't know what it's like to be me, to be unwanted, unseen, and unloved. This is how a foster child feels. And I think about Daphne that first night, that first 24 hours, and not being able to communicate. She would shy away from language at times. But then, fortunately, she was really close in proximity to our youngest child at the time, Mercy, who, I mean, they're like a month apart. And so she began to shadow her. She played catch up with her. She, she potty trained with us. And slowly this little beam began to come out from within. It's always there, but she let us do her hair and all this kind of stuff. She had the best hair. And my wife's over here smiling and crying, so I'm only going to look at her a little bit. She just began to flourish, and she just fit within our family. I mean, this is our Christmas card, you know? Like, we're not going to shy away from even these moments of importance at Christmas time. She's in our family at that Christmas. So she's going to be in the Christmas photo, and she fit. And we can show you her photos now, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. We're not always able to do that because of legal reasons. We have to kind of block out face on social media and things like that. One of my all-time favorite pictures of her is this, and thank y'all for bearing with me. This is an awesome one to look at and a hard one to look at because this is our two foster children at this time, and the only thing that connects them is the fact that they're in our home and they're being shown love. They have no connection whatsoever to each other, right? They didn't grow up the same. They're not the same color. Nothing about that makes any sense, but it's beautiful, and here she is, helping him, caring for him as if she gets to be this big sister. And she is in that moment. It's one of those photos that you snap, sort of, you know, the action shot that you snap kind of impromptu. Daphne made a decision when we heard that she had two older siblings and then a younger sibling that was born, all half siblings. And they were all basically living reunited in East Texas, up in the Winnsboro area. And the Lord was working on us. Like, man, you know, if this was our kids, if three of our kids were together and one was separated, wouldn't we want them all to be together? And so oftentimes what happens in foster care is that, you know, the state or the system dictates when a child is removed or moved around or some of those things. And we actually initiated it. Here is a child that was our daughter for a year. And we love her. Looking at her still, I can hear her voice and her laughter, and we felt it was in her best interest, not our best interest, for her to grow up with the only blood on this planet that she has. We felt like we had shown her so much love by God's hand that she's going to be okay. We're hoping this summer to get to go visit her. Not because she's far away, but because she needed a little bit of time to acclimate up there. We need a little bit of time to mourn. I'm just kidding. But we needed a little bit of time for us to transition from being mom and dad to being, you know, Uncle Dustin, you know, Aunt Carly, whatever that looks like. But we miss her. And that was hard. That's a part of this. And we'll talk about some things that people say to us in a moment. Our story wasn't done. When we moved to College Station, we were a family of eight. She was with us. That was a hard thing for us as we began our ministry there, is for her to sort of be subtracted from that. That was hard. It was hard on our kids. But we're rooting for her, and we still do. We got a call in March. This is just recently. Beginning of March. I'm checking my date here. March, what was it? 3rd. Yes. Okay. March 3rd. And the only reason I think we got to a point where we could say, yes, this is Daquan. He was 8 months, I think, at the time. Is that right? As our kids were sad and processing how we were a family of eight, vehicle completely maxed out, within a week's time, they are coming to us with tears on their face and smiles saying, "But Dad, we still have a seat left in the car. So who's coming next?" Kids, right? So Daquan, we said yes to Daquan. We didn't field a lot of calls, but we said yes to Daquan. He came and lived with us for about 3 weeks. Just a real joy. But again, we're back in baby land, and we're thinking, oh man, how are we going to do this? We don't have anything. He was only with us about 3 weeks, and then he got to be reunited with some of his brothers. He has four older brothers and got to be with them in a town about 30 minutes from us, which was exciting. About 4 days after Daquan went to go be with his brothers, we had already had scheduled one of the happiest days of our life because Fisher, this was his gotcha day. He got to become Fisher Rich Barty. He took the middle name of Carly's grandfather. We were back in East Texas at the original spot, and just so much joy. We know this judge. He's a member of the church there and had run for judge and won while we were there. And, you know, we take some of these pictures and just such a solidifying moment, right? We felt like we've had an unusual experience in foster care. It stretched our faith in ways that we had not imagined. I love the fact that I don't have to say that I have four kids plus, I just have five kids now, right? There's no four plus two anymore. You know, this is five kids now. And it's funny because people say really interesting things to you when you're a foster family. You may be able to relate to a few of these, Jason. And they just say things to you. For instance, say, I can never do that. I can never do that. And I want to sort of rebuff that. Because I think while you may could never do that, which is foster care, you can do something. Whether that's related to foster care or to loving on a displaced person. Bending, stretching in some ways for someone who's not like you. You know, I think we heard a little bit of that this morning. What was the term that Brother Bob used? Those creepy people? Right? Well, kids aren't creepy. For some they are, but I know they're hard. It's inconvenient, but they're always also so cute and so very fun. People also say this, or they say, oh, that's got to be hard. That's got to be so hard to do that. It's got to be so draining. And it is. But here's what I also know, is that we can do hard things. This is like my wife's anthem during the moments when the crazy hour would hit. I would hear her repeating, and I just kept thinking, is that from the Bible? Are you paraphrasing Philippians here? I don't really know. She just kept saying, we can do hard things. And it's true. Most of us know this. Anything that we want to do well, it's going to be hard. There's going to be a hard road, but it is worth it. Other times people would say this. They would say, oh, you guys are so amazing. There's nobody like, wow, you guys are. And that would, while that would feel good for like 20 seconds, it was quickly followed by, okay, stop. We are nothing special. And also, we're not the only ones doing this or who have done this. Like, we're not. Again, we would meet people. We now feel a kinship and a solidarity with people who have dared to kind of walk this path. And there's nothing special about us. If anything, this is an extension kind of what we're trying to do, how we're trying to live our life currently. Next question is the one that was not so much a saying as it was that of what someone said to us is what I would begin to think of my own self. This was my greatest fear. Is there enough of me to share? Is there enough love to go around, right? This was my rebuttal to Risa's rainbow in the early goings of, hey, our family is incomplete. I thought, oh, you know, we got to care for what we have. We got to protect this house. We don't want to let any of that mess in here. We're going to get some on us. We heard that this morning. But the reality is, as a follower of Christ, there's always going to be enough. There's always going to be enough love to go around. Always. If your priorities are in line. And it's true, on our worst days, somehow Jesus got us through and he filled us up again to get up the next day and just keep doing it. And he would give us these nuggets of joy and of hope and of grace. And we went, wow, this is really worth it. You know, there's enough love to go around from each of us. There's enough love in this world. Here's some statistics. I recognize it's a little small on the screen. You could Google these in probably a more clean approach, but at least somewhere around 400,000 to 450,000, depending on what year it is, kids are currently in foster care. Their outlooks are very bleak. It does not look good at all for them. There's some statistics about if churches, like one family, two families, and all the churches in America stepped up, that we could alleviate that number. And it's true. We could completely eradicate that number. But guess what? That's the current number. And what you find is that that number would come back around again. Because the reality of foster care situations is that sometimes mom and dad, they're not making great choices. Kids continue to come into this system. And there's a lot of darkness and a lot of pain. But the statistics are overwhelming. You think, well, what can I do? What can I possibly do to change anything? Well, I'm rooting for this guy. This is Governor Matt Bevin of Kentucky. He has a great story. Have you ever heard of this guy? Heard of this story? Oh, man. This guy, he's on the left. He noticed that he was at a park one day, before he did had anything to do with politics. He was, an investment banker or something. And he noticed that there was this 11-year-old girl who was playing with his daughters and fit in with his daughters like she was one of them. And he inquired about her, like what her story was, where her parents was. And he learned that she was in a foster care group home. And so they went through the whole process, the training, everything, all the background checks for years trying to adopt her. They get right up to the point where they're about to adopt her. And the government, I'm sorry, the state government in Kentucky said, actually, you already have too many kids of your own. We're not going to place her with you because we don't believe that she would be shown attention or love. So she's going to remain in her foster care group home. Well, this infuriated him in the right ways. So he said, my heart breaks for her, but I'm not done welcoming in displaced people. So his family goes and finds four other girls from Ethiopia and adopts them like the next year. He decides to run for office, loses out, I think, to Mitch McConnell in one race, but then he becomes the governor of Kentucky, and his number one agenda is to completely transform the foster care system in Kentucky, not to do what's best for the Kentucky government, but to do what's best for the child. And that's the number one thing in foster care. So he's got this fire under him in the right ways, and I am rooting for him. Because the system, we can say, well, the system's broke. Yes, but the kids aren't broke. And love's not broke. How do we get all these folks together? What could a church do? I'm working under the presumption that you're coming here from some kind of faith community, some kind of church context. What could the church do? Here's a super slide right here. And just take a moment. I know, again, some small parts, but I'm going to try to point them out to you. Just wrap your head around. Here's a few things you can do. Obviously, you can be praying for larger legislative things and for, you know, individual needs of families. You move over to the right, you kind of got house cleaning, groceries, if you've got a situation where you've got some relationships with foster care families. You go to the left, you see respite care. This is a huge one if you're a part of a church, okay? And you, it's a hard sell maybe to get your congregation on board with fostering outright. Respite care is simply this. You go through, get CPR training, and you go through, and you have to go through a certain level of training. They do some background checks on you so that you know that you're not, well, you may be a creepy person, but you're not a creeper. You're not a threat to the child, okay? This is one that I really think our churches can step in, right? This would be the shallow end of the pool. If the local church could raise up a respite army for foster care families in all of our cities, it would start to make an enormous difference. Because a foster family can, you know, parents can't go out of town. They can't go on a date. They can't do vacation because it takes a certified caregiver to watch them, to care for them. And it sends the right message. You get into things about money and transportation, okay. Babysitting, let's talk about that. It's happening in our town. Our church and another church are doing some babysitting nights where they have several certified respite care and a whole lot of either high school students or college students. And they're just having like a foster kids night out thing, right? So some foster children can be dropped off. Maybe there's some other children that are there too, but they're cared for. Mom and dad can go shopping, can go sleep, whatever they need to do. But it's a good one. You get into cars and meals and maintenance, okay, all those things. I heard of a really good idea that's happening at a church in Austin. Some friends of mine are doing some birthday boxes for foster care. Like they're taking the banker's box and they did like a service project where they're coloring them all together and putting basically like a birthday in a box. All the things you need to make a cake, all the things you need to throw a party. So if you get a foster child, this happens to one of our friends, if you get a foster child and they have a birthday, say within like 10 days of them being in your home, you're prepared. Or maybe their birthday just happened, they didn't get anything. You can throw them a party and you won't really be out a lot of funds there. Does that make sense? And the kids get to decorate. It's a really neat thing. You've got, I don't know how you would call it, like closets, pantries, something like that, to kind of a market, foster care market. Several churches dedicate like that, maybe that storage room in their building that they think, this is embarrassing or ugly, let's transform it and make this a place where a foster family, if they didn't have a car seat or something, well, now that's there, they can check that out, kind of an on loan thing while they're meeting those needs. You know, maybe they keep it, maybe they don't, but they can care for that. Certainly, if your church was going to get on board with respite care in the upper left, I would try to offer making it super easy on people to get CPR certification. That's a win-win for your church in general, but that's going to have to be done. So set up a couple Saturdays, big blocks of time, maybe get the discounted price to help them get certified. Everybody wins on that vein. And then I heard of a great church in Dallas, where some of our friends go, up over in Trophy Club, where the elders actually, they felt led by the Holy Spirit to do this, and they said, hey, it's National Orphan Sunday, and if you're a family who's going to adopt or you're going to do foster care, we as a church are going to stand with you and support you, not just with our presence, but with our funds too. And so if you want help, we're going to pledge this much to help you care for displaced people. Great. And I know that mattered to some of those families. You get to things like this. We're wearing these t-shirts that are kind of orphan t-shirts. This is on Easter Sunday, so our Easter best was supporting an organization called Forget the Frock, and you can buy these t-shirts. They're expensive t-shirts, I guess you could say, but the funds go towards orphan care, and you wear them on Easter as a symbol, as a sign, hey, I'm standing with orphans, refugees, displaced people, foster care, all of that. And so we're wearing that on that day. Thank you, Doug Page, for the nice letters. Those look good. One of the things that is the neatest part of this story, I'm kind of looking at my time. We're going to do some Q&A here at the end. One of the creepiest parts of this story, let's just steal his word, is how God has worked in this relationship. Because this gal on the left right here, that's Fisher's birth mom. Her name's Trinity. And Fisher has two older siblings that she lost to foster care and adoption. He has one half-sister that's lower than him, younger than him, that was lost to foster care. So if you're keeping score at home, that's four children that she has given birth to that she no longer has. She just gave birth to her fifth a week before his adoption. She's been clean for a year. Her prospects of keeping number five are so good. And here's what's crazy. I'm not angry or mad with her or disappointed with her at all. That's about where I stop. But my wife, in her faith, and her faith and her love that just grows, my wife has befriended her. They talk. They talk all through Facebook, the messaging and all this kind of stuff. They know what's going on in each other's lives. They know what they know the statuses of things. They get picture updates. It is wild and weird. I'm like, is this okay? Can she track us down? You know what I mean? I get all these weird anxieties, but it's beautiful. It's upside down. It's crazy kinds of love. And I love this photo because here she is holding her new little baby girl, right? What's the baby girl's name?
Audrey.
Yeah. Audrey's right here, and she's just looking on him, and so she's proud of him. He's loved, he's being cared for, but we still want her to know him when the time is right. We still want to cultivate that relationship and love and care for her as best God would see fit. We are rooting for her to develop and flourish as a mom. He's okay. Her other kids are okay. They're being cared for. We're rooting for her in her current state. It's one of the neat things that happens, unusual things that happens. One of the things that I guess is surprising, one of these unexpected things we didn't see was going to, you know, God was going to lead us to. On our drive out here, we posted some photos even on Facebook this morning, and she commented on that. And we're like, I mean, that's just so weird for me. Like, wow, this is just weird, but it's good. And she's checking out things in her own walk in faith. She messaged Carly saying things about wanting to get baptized and other stuff like that. And we're like, we've never brought that up to her at all. And yet, it's really neat and really humbling. Here's kind of last quote I want to leave you with. Two quotes, upper left, upper right. We're not all called to do the same thing. But we are all called to do something. Do something. Get some skin in the game. Roll up your sleeves. Whatever that looks like. Obviously, we're biased towards these displaced children in foster care. Yes. When you meet them, when you see them, you're either called to bring a child into your home or you're responsible to support those who do. I don't know if I would have said it that strong. I would have maybe said, hey, you may not be called to do fostering, but it doesn't take a calling to support or to help. To figure out what it would take to get to become a respite certified person, to care for foster kids, to love on foster kids. When they come into your church, to welcome them in a way, in a loving environment like they've never known. That's what I would say. We're not all called to the same thing, but we're called to do something. Okay, questions, dialogue. We've got about 5-6 minutes. Anything burning, anything noodling, I lose you anywhere. If my answers are incomplete, I would probably ask for assistance from the person over here, two seats over. Questions? Comments?
Have you seen, I know that y'all have talked a lot about this in your context, both places that you've been and talked about kind of living upside down. Have you seen it, other people kind of take hold of that message and it look different than foster care?
Meaning is foster care the only thing?
Well, yeah, I hear you saying it's not, yeah. But I'm wondering if y'all have seen any, just through your relationships with people in the same company, or has it been through foster care?
Yeah, I think, obviously I think ours is biased towards foster care, but I think wherever you live, what is that thing that that perhaps terrifies you, scares you, that you've been pushing back on, but you think, if I just stretch this much, it will ruin my rhythm and my happiness and my perfect little world and music and sunshine and all of that. Right? What is that thing? For some of our friends in Austin, they have a front row seat to some folks that are Syrians, that are Syrian refugees. So for them, their proximity has put them right in close connections, things they were walking with or knew. So they go, okay, we know that's our thing. That's what we do. That's how we stretch. That's where we get messy. Are there other environments where perhaps it is a homeless individual? Perhaps this is a person in recovery? Yes. Whatever those things are, I think we do our best when we stretch. When we stretch. I don't think it's just limited to foster care. That's good. What else? Good thought. How many of you have a foster care family at your church? A foster care family? Okay. Yeah. One of the questions we get, I didn't put in also sometimes, how do your kids do with this? How do your kids do with the revolving door, right? Or perhaps if you don't have children or your children are all grown, you're going to think, I don't know how I could even do this caring for little ones again. Well, it doesn't always have to be little ones. People don't know this, but you can actually, it was a little strange, you can actually put down criteria of children that you would be okay accepting into your home. Does that make sense? You can do it by age. You can do it by ethnicity, all those things. You can do it by special needs, even if you wanted to. You can put all those criteria, and you can say. A lot of people want the younger ones. I get that. But there are some, and you meet them, they go, man, I feel like my sweet spot is right within teenagers. And you think, wow, they just have a special connection with them. All of that is up for grabs, but it's something, I guess, for our little ones we had to be mindful of, is it would look a little strange if we had a 16-year-old male and all my kids are, under 10. Those dynamics would be a little strange right now. It might not be in a few years for us, but it would be right now. It might be a little strange if I had 16 and 17-year-old kids and we took in another six-month-old. That could be a little maddening, too. So I think everyone's just got to kind of feel that out, but our kids have responded incredibly. They love these little ones as if they were their own kind, and they weep when they left, and they were joyous when they came. Okay? Almost through. Other ideas? Questions?
How do you navigate bringing a church in? So working for a church, communicating this is something we're going to do, mm-hmm. and part of the other group of people you're ministering to are people who want to be helpful, may not understand all the legal parameters that you have to live in, too.
What do you mean by legal parameters? Like
not posting pictures.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Kind of having to be a rest of the family, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great question. I think if you've got some buy-in from at least one family, and if someone on your leadership team, if this is an elder, if this is a deacon, if this is one of the ministers or a minister family, is really kind of partnered up, maybe not taking the lead, but partnered up and supporting them, being a boat, being a vessel, I think you can get several things done. I think you can rally folks to create perhaps that market of resources, even if it's not a dedicated room. We can say, hey, we're going to round up a bunch of stuff, we're going to rouse a bunch of stuff, and we're going to bless this family with it because we know they need it. We're going to get certified so we can do respite care. I'm for foreign missions that go to orphanages. Don't ever Don't ever doubt that. Okay, I do that. I enjoy those. And yet, I kind of feel this sense of, we've got these displaced, almost orphans here, too, that are just bouncing around. And so I'm wondering, okay, it shouldn't be a hard sell, but sometimes it is. It's kind of like, okay, we like the international trip more than we like the domestic trip. You know, that's fine. We get the passport. But the domestic needs can potentially have a whole lot more staying power if we'll frame it right. I think you have just have a conversation, too, like education about, hey, can't post their faces. You know, we may have been breaking some rules in the sense, I'll just be honest with you, we had Trinity and her grandma, Fisher's grandma, come to a pumpkin patch night with us one night. You know, and she's still doing, like, the steps. There's still this fostering component that rights have not been terminated. But they were, I mean, it was a safe space. It was a public event. You know, now they know where we work and all this, but it ended up working out fine. I think every one of those situations is different, but I think the main thing is to try to put it out there. I think foster care has been around for a while. It's had a bad rep, but now I kind of get this sense of, you know, this is something I think our people can do. It's more curious, and I think there should be people that are excited for it, have a heart for it. That's a great question. We can talk more about that, too, even after the class, because there may be some other things that I'm not covering that you think of, too. I'm not going to do like Bob Goff or Brad Cox and put my cell phone up here or something like that, because that would be bad. There's not that many of you, but you can get confused. But I will put my email up here, and I don't have a card. But if there's more questions, look us up on Facebook, either of us. We would love to have a conversation, even if it's not about you directly. It's about your church or someone you know. We just want to help. For us, if it's one family or one congregation that kind of gets a fire lit under them for this, it's a win for us. It's a victory for us. We're committed to this. We have made the joke, we probably won't be empty nesters who get to travel solo. We'll probably be raising kids for the rest of our life. And that's a good way to go down swinging for us. You know, that's the stuff. That's the stuff. Other thoughts, ideas, questions I want to get out of here? Yeah, go.
You touched on this, but I want to frame the question a little bit differently. Each of us is a product of a whole chain of influence factors, and what you grow up with is your norm. How have you seen it change your kids, bio kids, who see the kids come and go and now one is going to stay? How have you seen it mark their lives?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Yeah, I think they realize in some senses how we're not perfect. We don't give them everything, but how good they've had it knowing that they have not been moved or displaced or their parents have not fought or given into substances or those kinds of things. They realize all the built-ins that they've had. They've also realized what it's like now to stretch and care because they see us do that, and we don't, you know what it's like. You don't have favorites among your children, but you do love them all kind of uniquely and differently. I mean, you love them in a certain way that's all the same, but there's different approaches that you have. So they watched us not just minister to church folk and strangers that we love, but now in our own home. You know, this little one who grew up in darkness. I mean, he was probably birthed in darkness. Now he's come into a situation where we're trying to bring light. And they've watched that. And there is a sense that they get that these are the kinds of things we want to be about, not just the latest this, and this. Those are all cool. But now they look at people and they don't write anybody off. Not that they're so trusting, but now they get that, okay, you know, to be a Jesus person is to say, wow, you know, I see value in you even when no one else does. You know, they're still working through that. They're little, but they've made the space to. And of course, they still fight over, oh, so-and-so got into my stuff and broke it. I mean, that's just kids. That happens. Hey, I want to pray for us if we can, and we'll get out. Thanks for your time. Thanks for your patience. And again, we want to talk more about it if we can. So Father, thanks so much for what you're doing in our nation. Thanks for what you're doing in our city and cities. And Father, thank you for what you're doing in our churches. Thank you for what you're doing in our friends who are walking this road, walking this path. I pray your hands are upon them as they stretch. Thank you for being a God who stretched for us. That's who you are. It's how you love. And pray that we do that too. Father, thank you for this gift, this channel, this imperfect system that you can still do good work through and around. God, may we be vessels for this reconciliation. May we be vessels for restoration in the lives of these little ones. Can we just change some trajectories? That's what we're after. We love you so much. And be with us this week as we worship and laugh and learn. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.